Piet.
This is an interview with Connie McCready at her boathouse on the Columbia River near Salty's restaurant, right, on Marine Drive?
Mm-hmm. We're at Rose City Yacht Club.
Rose City Yacht Club.
Mm-hmm.
And the interviewer for the Oregon Historical Society is Clark Hansen. The date is June 29th, 1994, and this is tape 20, side 2. Last time we were talking about some of the issues, we were talking last time about some of the issues in City Hall, and during 1975, and I wanted to ask you a little bit about the city waste treatment plant and some of the issues around that. I believe that you were trying to make more efficient use of the waste that was coming out.
Yeah, also the garbage. We were trying to find ways of marketing Portland's garbage and sewage.
Uh-huh.
And I took a lot of junkets. I shouldn't call them junkets. They were work trips. And they certainly weren't playful or fun, but they were very interesting. I went to see several of the things that other areas had done. Some of the people were trying to sell us on their process for treating sewage, turning it into fertilizer. And I went to Chicago and we checked out New Orleans. That's where I saw these funny tracks in the sand around the plant, and I asked them what that was, and they said, that's alligator tracks.
Oh,
<And yeah. laughs> I was watching very carefully where I went.
Yeah.
And then there was several places in the Midwest, all kinds of things that people were trying. It was very new then, and very, very experimental, and I didn't want us to make a mistake, because some of the places that we went, they were really going in the hole, and others were quite successful, but very expensive to do. And since there had been so much talk, not very overt talk, but grand talk about mafia connections and things with various garbage and sewage related outfits, I wanted to make sure that we didn't get involved with one of those.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, I could go into this for an hour and a half, but when you told me the number of the tape, I'm going to answer you in one syllable answers, and we're just going to quit. Well, what do you want to know about that?
Well, you were, the city was incinerating 65 dry tons of sludge a day.
Until, if you say so, I've forgotten.
Until you ordered studies on the possible alternatives, and I know that there were hearings about potential uses such as fertilizer, and
that's
I was
right.
Wondering whether there was anything else that came out of that.
I can't remember what the final outcome was. Isn't that something? Because I became quite an expert on this and was asked to speak at all kinds of conferences on it National League of Cities and Conference of Mayors and things, because they thought that I was going about it the right way. But I've forgotten what all I did. I know that we went up to Boeing. They had quite an interesting project, and whether that was the one we brought to the council or not, the city is doing. Is using one of these plants.
Uh-huh.
And in fact, they named the plant after one of the men from their sewage treatment plant that was quite an outstanding.
So is this the type of material that, for instance, I had purchased for my garden, that kind of soil, fertilizer soil?
I think you can. Gosh, isn't that terrible? Once I got out of the job, and that's been so many years, I cannot tell you the extent to which it's been developed. At the outset, I think they were just doing it in large quantities, like, you know, for parks and for big industrial parks, places where I don't think that you might have been able to go out to the sewage treatment plant and buy sacks or pickup truck loads. And that was the aim, of course, was to allow people to take advantage of this. After all, it's their sewage
right.
and their garbage. Talk about recycling. But I really just can't remember now. And it hadn't been completed. When I was still there, they had started it. And they had one plant going. That's right, it's coming back to me, and the neighbors were complaining about the odor. And they were complaining about the odor before we ever even started it up. So so it makes you kind of a little suspicious. But I know that they did some improvements to the plant.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that there hasn't been any problem with it later.
Were you also in charge of the landfills then?
The dump, you bet. Connie Country.
Connie Country?
Right. And we did, that's one of the things we started was some recycling processes. I remember going to one plant where they were using the different colored bottles. And we're making, what was it? It was beautiful, whatever it was. I remember being so impressed with the stuff, but I don't think that we felt that we would be producing enough to be able to make it financially worthwhile.
Mm-hmm.
But when we quit landfilling so much of the stuff, it's saved an awful lot of money for the city.
I bet. Well,
I'm sorry.
No, that's
vague
okay.
About what we did.
Let's go on then to the 1976 campaign. You had several opponents.
Wasn't that the one with that charmer, Jean Lorenz? Golly.
Posterity's sake that we switched to this location because you were suggesting it would be quieter than your backyard.
Oh, we had kids on three sides at home, and then they got that new pool the first day that we were out there.
Well, in any case, in between planes, it's a lot quieter. You had in the primary. I think it was in the primary campaign, you had, aside from John Lorenz, Lloyd Fletcher, and...
That's it. It's not still on, is it? You know, I think we ought to explain this. The reason we're out here is because we had so much noise when we were trying to interview in my backyard.
That's what I was saying.
Yeah, we were surrounded by three batches of kids, and at this that particular time was they put a brand new swimming pool, wading pool type next door, and but the noise was deafening. And the reason we picked today for coming out here, at least the reason I picked today, was because the Air National Guard does they're weekend warriors. They don't go up during the week, and this is a Wednesday, and there they are. They've switched their schedule for some peculiar reason.
Oh, they knew we were going to be out here.
They must have.
They wanted to spoil our fun.
It's like, I'm sure I told you earlier, didn't I, about when my car was blowing up at City Hall?
Yes.
And then the next time, when Terry Shrunk had suggested that if I were going to leave it downtown, that I take it over and leave it in the city garage, where it would be safer. And so the only other time I ever left it downtown, we took it over, left it in the city garage, and went in my car. And that was when they were building the First National Bank Tower, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And they cut. a water line and flooded the basement of the city garage, and my car was totally flooded.
Oh, no.
Oh, I didn't finish telling you that.
No.
You can't win. I mean, just call me Connie Bullifs.
Connie Catastrophe.
Yeah. I've never heard of the Air National Guard practicing in midweek. But we saw that's what those planes are.
Yeah, they definitely were.
They snarl.
Well, anyways, your chief opponents were, aside from John Lorenz, Lloyd Fletcher, Virginia Dean Seidel, and Bonnie Colton. Do you remember them at all?
Barely. Fletcher I remember better than the others. Bonnie Colton, that name's familiar. I think she's run a few times,
I think she
hasn't
has too.
She?
Mm-hmm.
I think she's run on an oddball ticket of some sort, like... what are some of those? I can't remember now, but...
Well, why were you running for re-election? Did you really want to keep your job?
Masochism.
The Willamette Week said, they had a couple quotes from you. One was, quote, "More than any other time in her public career, she has looked at the rewards and frustrations of her jobs, weighing them against her accomplishments in office." And then they quote you as saying, "I've been on the council since 1970. I thought maybe it was time to go home and read French novels and eat bonbons," MacCready jokes. "Her humor does not hide her seriousness with which she has debated running for re-election. But right now is one of the most challenging periods for people in government."
That's true. It was a hard decision. And I studied it hard. And if we'd had, if there'd been somebody decent running for them, for the position, I might have changed my mind. But everything I heard, I didn't know the guy at all, but everybody told me about this Lorenz person who was running for that, was filing for the slot, and they were just aghast and saying, "Connie, you have to go for it. You just have to run. You can't let that man have it by default." And the rest of the people were unknown.
Why did he have any appeal if he had such a terrible reputation?
Well, it's just the people who knew him. He didn't know very many people.
But did he have a good public persona or good public speaking experience, or why was he able to?
Not really, but
or was it more anti you?
It was more anti me, I think. There's always a bunch who want to run the rascals out, and I did take controversial stances, as you may have noticed.
Yeah.
And Al kept saying, "Keep up the good work, Connie. You're going to get yourself defeated yet," because they were not popular stances. The stance I took on the gay issue, and the stance on fluoridation, and a whole herd of the things that just Mounthood Freeway,
right.
And there were lots of tough ones.
Willamette Week seemed to indicate that by this point that really you were changing in some ways, that from a moderate conservative outlook to a more liberal outlook. They said that her major backing in the past has been from the Portland business community, but her stance on issues lately have chipped away at that conservative support and may create the need for her to find a new constituency. Did you feel that?
I think they were probably right. I don't think that I changed so much. It was their conception of me.
That's what
that
I was wondering.
Changed. Yeah. I was the same person. I still, they saw me as a conservative. Mm-hmm. And sure, initially, I was supported more by businessmen. Well, I think probably all the time I was, and labor, some late to my surprise, pretty much, but
well,
a lot of labor.
that was not typical of it, of someone that also gets business support too to get labor.
No, it's not too typical. And but I tell you, there's nothing more conservative in many ways than the labor people. You think that's liberal, but no way. They're really hard. And the blue collar line is not very flexible. And when they saw me on the gay issue particularly, they were going to get me on that one. And the Mount Hood Freeway.
Right.
And I can't think offhand, but there a number of the stances that I had taken were not popular with those people.
Well, your support for the gay rights ordinance pushed the Portland Police Association into supporting John Lawrence, didn't it? Or
Portland Police Association is an odd.
Is it? How would you characterize them?
Not very many of them participate in the union.
Oh, really?
That's surprising, I'm sure, to most people. Yeah. They think that the police union is everybody. A lot of them, most of them belong, but nobody, they don't participate. There goes our... belong because they want the raises that they think that the that their labor leader gets them, and I doubt very much that their labor, whoever he is, accomplishes it by himself. It's more well, I don't want to go off into all of that, but it's I did not have any respect for the head of that union. He was a real two-faced person, and he went well with Lorenz. They were soulmates, so I don't think that my support of the gay rights thing pushed them into anything. I think he was probably looking for something to blame it on. I did not have much to do with him, and he liked to have access to all of the commissioner's offices, and I don't think he felt that he had enough access to mine anyway.
Well, the paper also said that your opposition to the Mount Hood Freeway drew the wrath of the Multnomah County Labor Council.
That's right.
Which had been a past supporter of yours. That must have hurt.
It did. It did, but then I realized that that's the way they play, and I can't change me. I have to vote the issue as I see it, and not because of the support you get or don't get as a result of it. And I know that is not very, very popular nor a terribly common stance, but I wish more people would do that, and then we'd have better government.
Hmm. They listed it as another reason that you were having a little more difficult time, was that you had supported the residential care facilities ordinance, which allowed halfway houses to locate in any residential neighborhood after review.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I didn't bring that ordinance in, and I wasn't...
So was that generally just against the city council because the city council passed it, and you happen to be up for election?
Yeah, I think that would cover it pretty well. I couldn't believe the testimony of some of those people. There was a plan to put one in Southeast Portland. What's that area called? Eastmoreland, or that wasn't really Eastmoreland. No, this was Mount Taborish area, and it was a halfway house. This was for it wasn't even a halfway having to do with criminal activities. This was for a handicapped children who had physical handicaps. And I couldn't believe the nerve of this one man spoke for a group there testifying against it because they didn't want they had to have these children out riding their trikes on the sidewalk so they could be seen by their own children because that they would be so unattractive or with their handicaps. I was so shocked by this. I think I said, how dare you? I was the compassion, it was not even in his lexicon, you know? Which reminds me, did you ever hear that thing about there is no such word as can't in the lexicon of youth, nor lexicon.
Nor lexicon, right.
But well, anyway, yes, the residential care facilities, particularly the halfway house types, they certainly wouldn't vote for any more jails. And they didn't want the people let out. They wanted them put in jail, but they wouldn't build any new ones. And so they wouldn't give you money to cope with what you had. I don't know what they expected us to do. Just wave a magic wand and they go away.
The well, how about we characterized your situation by saying MacCready's decisions seem to flow more from her own internal agonizing over what is right than from a consistent response to a political group or philosophy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
They're right.
That must have been.
That was agonizing.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, I'm just thinking of other people that have natural constituencies. Goldschmidt, Ivancy, who have their core of supporters, and I can, aside from maybe they're just their own natural tendency to be in that particular group, it might also be very politically pragmatic.
Oh, they played to them both, right.
Then you have this core to get out there and work for you.
Yeah, you certainly do. And the funny thing is, when they had, a person who was in, say, Frank's group, mm-hmm. or in someone else's group, it was almost as if they would have to be against you, which struck me so funny. I wasn't running against Frank until the end, of course. But I think we better wait a moment. Let me go again. It seemed to be that they couldn't be for one person without being against another, even though they were not in the same race.
Right.
You've seen people like that?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, and the stronger they are for that person, the more violently opposed they are to the other people.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny.
Does that necessarily follow an ideological line? Conservative, liberal, radical, whatever, but
I think probably so. Frank drew, as you know, from the arch conservative, and it was in the lower educated, the blue collar worker, and the elderly. Well, he played on the fears of the elderly, which I thought was really a dirty trick. That infuriated me because there's enough things for those poor souls. Well, I'm an old person, elderly. There's plenty of things to be afraid of that are real without having somebody manufacture things. I couldn't believe it when we had that St. Helens eruption, one of the many, and I had to have, you know, press conferences from time to time telling people that they were going to be penalized if they didn't clean up their parking lots and the tops of their buildings because, for example, otherwise the wind would blow the stuff all down onto the streets, mm-hmm. and then we'd have to do it all over again, and we had to give them the kinds of warnings and tell them what was working and what wasn't and stuff. Well, this just horrified Frank. So he had to have his own press conference, and he had the water bureau, and he told people to fill their bathtubs, for heaven's sakes. So wasting all that water, my gosh, there was no danger whatsoever that the water works. But he had to have a reason to have his press conference, and that's what he did. Fill buckets, fill jars, but fill your bathtub. And I thought, well, here goes the showers. We're going to have a lot of dirty people around, or we're going to have a lot of unsafe water.
The paper also said that you had opposed both the Office of the Neighborhood Associations and the Metropolitan Human Relations Commission, calling them unnecessary to the city's bureaucracy. Did that alienate you from the neighborhood associations then?
Yeah. Yeah.
And what was your feeling about them? Why were you opposed to them?
I think we did that in the last.
You know, we
interview.
Did. I know we have talked about the neighborhood association before.
Yeah, I'm sure we did that. But I can I'll do it again.
Well, no, that's okay. If you think we've covered that, that'd
I
be
think
fine.
So because okay. I remember you being. You said, "Oh, I see."
Yeah.
I
mean, that's the Air National Guard, I'm sure.
What? One of the major reasons that I went into it, there were two or three things,
right.
But at the time that it was brought up to begin with, Neil brought them in, and it was to be two. It was going to be the Neighborhood Association, and then there was going to be another neighborhood layer in between the big broad-based one for the specific neighborhoods. There was going to be like the Northeast Coalition. It would be like, you know, six or seven neighborhood associations would be grouped into one of these others, so you'd have an extra layer and more power, and this it left the poor individual out in the limb. It was a dirty trick to pull on the people.
You you were highly regarded for your being a public administrator, and also your staff was highly regarded. This is sort of a review that the Willamette Week is doing of where you are at this point, you know, as you're going into this race with John Lorenz.
Yeah, I was awfully lucky. I don't know how I did it, but I got wonderful staff and kept them. And then I took full credit for what they did, of course, but they were just great. And I was pleasantly surprised to discover that I was an administrator. I had no idea that I would be. I could have been lousy, but to my pleasant surprise, I was good at it. Of course, I worked awfully hard at the job.
Well, at this point in your career, how would you characterize your own personal philosophy?
Now?
Then.
Oh, then?
Uh-huh.
Well, I still considered myself a moderate, I thought I was sort of a middle-of-the-roader myself. I was, it's not a very exciting description, but by and large, I was moderate. But maybe a touch of humaneness tossed in, she says modestly, playing her violin.
Well, how would you characterize John Lorenz then?
We've talked a little bit about it. A total louse.
Uh-huh.
He was a $3 bill. He was out for everything he could get. He lied and cheated. You wouldn't believe the people that called me with the horror stories of things he had done or cheated them out of in their jobs. And little old ladies with their investments, threats.
Yes, I've heard
threats.
About that.
Yeah.
Well, Lemma, we had a lot to say about that, and they said that he had engendered deep mistrust and dislike from his former associates and friends, and one person that had worked with him said that he has a huge drive for power. And in his opinion, too much of it as a vindictive in nature.
and that he had hidden agendas, and he would distort candidates' records. And
yeah.
Did he distort your record?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
He's the one that's been, what were, one was that I was an alcoholic, another that I was a homosexual, and another that if I were elected, he would say at places that I would not serve out my term. And then people would ask afterwards, and more people who'd been at these meetings had called to tell me this and said, oh, well, didn't you know she has terminal cancer? I'd get these calls and people say, oh, Connie, I'm so sorry.
Oh, no.
And I said, which? That I'm a drunk or that I'm a homosexual or that I'm dying of cancer?